94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Juan Castillo, and I'm going to give you another story, man, that is going to blow your mind. It's about overcoming obstacles in our lives, man. And this brother right here, right now, he's on the air with us. And I'm going to let him talk all about himself and, of course, what he's been through in his life. I got Kevin Ross in the building. How you doing, brother?
What's going on, man? Thank you for having me, man.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So where you from, man?
I'm from Washington, D.C. originally.
All right. Tell me about growing up in D.C., man.
D.C. for me was super magical. You know what I mean? Because we had WHUR. We had a lot of the radio stations that kind of like really spearheaded the Quiet Storm movement. And so I was kind of saturated with that kind of music growing up. So, you know, my whole dad's side of the family sings. So that's all I really knew was music. And, you know, D.C. back then during like what the late 80s, early 90s was like still Chocolate City. And so, you know, it was beautiful, man.
That's cool. That's cool. So, you know, tell me about, you know, like early days, short pants days, you know, elementary school, high school, you know, what were you into, man?
I've always kind of been into the same thing, music.
Okay.
You know, because my dad sings heavy. And so, you know, you want to be like your pop. And right. So, you know, just kind of singing behind him. And he was singing in church. So I started singing in church.
All right.
You know, I started singing in school, singing in the choir. Then older I got, I started singing for girls. And that got me somewhere.
Right,
and,
right. That's all good.
You know, I went to an arts high school there, Duke Ellington School of the Arts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Great, man.
Yeah, so I did some classical training there. I realized that classical wasn't my bag. I have respect for all of the great composers. But I wanted to create my own music. I wanted to create my own, you know, timeless music that, you know, people could sing, you know, 200 years from now, something like that, you know, to have pieces of, you know, work that live far beyond what I could ever.
Right. Yeah, man. And of course, man, living in a city like D.C., man, you see the good and the bad, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And were you ever touched by any of that, man? Any of your classmates or folks that you knew, man, really got caught up in the streets at all?
Well, I had an older brother. We were 7 years apart. And so pretty much I lost him to the streets, essentially, in D.C. Just wrong place, wrong time, wrong people. But, you know, I learned a valuable lesson from that. And, you know, that is to, no matter what your environment is, no matter what your situation is, to stay focused and to stay grounded, most importantly. But, you know, my brother is all throughout my music. He's always with me. And, you know, that's just it. You know, it is what it is.
That's real cool, yeah. Man. Absolutely. So, okay, so you're in the Duke Ellington School, mm-hmm. You know, and it's time to graduate, man.
Yeah.
So life hits. What goes down?
Well, a funny thing about that is I didn't know where the heck I was going, like, until my senior year. And I was like, I know, I just don't want to do this classical music stuff. And so Berklee College of Music from Boston, they came to my school, and they were just kind of like advertising for the school. And I was like, man, it seems like a dope contemporary music school that I would be into. So I auditioned, and they gave me a partial scholarship, and that kind of like went into me enrolling into Berklee, and I graduated there, spent 4 years sharpening my tool there, and I had some great times up there.
Now, where was this at?
This was in Boston.
In Boston?
Yeah,
wow.
Boston,
okay,
Mass.
So, yeah, a little culture change, right?
Yeah, a big culture change.
So I know you didn't become a Boston Celtics fan, did you?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, because I'm a Knicks fan,
say
man.
That.
I will end this interview now. So who you follow? Do you follow the Wizards and all of them? What's
yeah,
up,
yeah, the Wizards, the Redskins, the Caps, yeah,
okay.
The Nationals,
yeah,
know, the Nats. Yeah,
yeah, you're all in world. You're all in world trouble. Just like we are, so that's all right. That's cool. That's all good. All right. So, okay. So, Berklee, man, what an experience that must have been, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so a lot of productions and things that you got involved with that.
Yeah, yeah. I spent a lot of my time just like networking, talking to people, like asking a whole bunch of questions. I didn't know how to play piano until I got to Berklee.
Okay.
So I really spent a lot of time like honing in on my craft as far as piano wise, asking questions, what chord is that, what's this, how you do that, how you read this, how you do that, all that stuff, you know, friends, teachers alike, you know, just trying to figure it out. And those were some great times because of the fact that it was all in what you made it. You know, I remember my last year of school, my mom was like, listen, we ain't got no more money, you know, the loans are depleted, you know, I don't know if you're going to be able to finish because we all tapped out of resources.
Right.
I was like, man, I felt like I was a representative of the school. You know what I mean? Like, they sent me to Switzerland. They sent me to Serbia. They sent me to all these places all across the world to represent for my school. And you mean to tell me that I can't afford to be at the school anymore?
Wow.
So every year I would like go up. I mean, prior to, you know, that final year, I would go up to scholarship office. And they would tell me, oh, you know, the only thing that we could say is that you're a perfect example of what a student should be. And the one lesson that I learned is that school and college is a business first. You know what I mean? Before there's education implemented, it is a business. And so I had to get my business together, right, you know, and create a portfolio and hustle and to figure out who's the one that can make the difference. Not the people that's in between, not the in-between guys.
Right.
But the guy that can make sure that, you know, I stay in school.
Right.
And so his name, I never forget his name, Damian Bracken. So I went up to top of scholarship, and this went on for like 6-7 weeks. And like every day I would wait for like hour or 2 hours. Sometimes I would skip classes just to like go up there. And I would say, you know, I'm Kevin Ross here to see Damian Bracken. I had his little notebook with me. And they was like, okay, give us 30 minutes, Kevin. You know, he'll be able to see you. And every day they'd be like, Damian can't see you. Try again next week. But it was every day, constant, because it was like, yo, like, if I don't get this money, if I don't figure it out, there won't be no school for me no more.
So you're trying to focus on school and also worrying about the situation.
Just staying in school.
Wow, man.
You know what I mean? So I think me focusing on school was irrelevant at the time, because it was like, yo, if I don't focus on staying in school, there won't be any more school. So
yeah.
I was thinking about the bigger picture. But
right.
Like 6 weeks later, you know, I ran into him. He was coming out of his office. I darted past the security, the secretary, and I said, "Yo, Damian." I was like, "My name is Kevin. You know, I just want to sit down with you for 5 minutes." And he looked at me, and he was like, "I know who you are already." And so he was like, "Come inside." And so he was just like, "How much do you need?" And I was like, "I just need 2 semesters worth." And he was like, "It'll be in your email by the end of the day."
That's hot, man.
And so for me, it was about perseverance.
Yeah.
It was about understanding, like, if you really want it, you can get it. It's just a fact of how far will you go in order to get what you want.
Right.
You know.
It's Juan Castillo. This is the Electric Drum, man. I'm speaking with my man Kevin Rossi, a national recording artist. And we're going to talk about his music and what he's doing right now. And in a bit, we're talking about his life right now and overcoming those obstacles that a lot of us have to go through. So okay, so you got through that, right?
Yeah.
You know, before we go into that, man, tell me about vocally, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, because a lot of, you know, you got a lot of singers out here that, you know, I mean, they come to the stage and the whole nine. It's like, so, you know, tell me about, you know, how did you learn how to sing? And they always come up with, well, now I'm just a natural singer, right? You know, like
it's like I said, you know, my father's a singer, so I learned a lot from him. And then schooling, you know, being in school, being classically trained, and then being, you know, trained contemporary wise, it helped me to be well-rounded. It helped me to kind of develop colors and different facets and different respect for different artists, different kinds of music. So, I mean, I had to put in the work, you know what I mean? Like, so, I wasn't singing like this at 14.
So your voice, you know, as an instrument, you actually had coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And I think young people need to know that, man. I mean, you know, it's like... I always point out Mary J. Blige, because you remember at first, you know, she didn't sound like she sounds now.
Much love to Mary.
And we love her. We love her, right? But, you know, I remember going to the concerts, and it wasn't the same thing like being in the studio, right? Mm-hmm. You can't punch it through there, right? So, but then, man, she started doing some work, right? And she talked about, you know, coaching and having a voice coach and the whole nine. So important for young people,
man. It's important. Vocal health is important. You just can't go up there. I mean, people... Listen, any artist out there, like, you ask any artist that's been doing it, touring or whatever, like, vocal health, your health overall is important. So you can't be out here saying, cool, I got 20 shows, you know, in 2 weeks, and then I got radio promo and I got this, so I'm gonna go ahead and see this chick and do this and that, and I'm gonna drink and I'm gonna party and I'm gonna wake up at 5 a.m. like it's nothing.
Right.
It is something. And that's how people, you know, pass out, or people get sick and they have pneumonia and things like that. Like, it's grueling, and it will wear and tear on you, not just physically, but emotionally, You know what I mean? Spiritually, mentally.
Right.
So, you know, you got to be sound. You got to understand and be ready for this, because, you know, it ain't an easy feat.
You mentioned spiritually. I mean, how important is the church and God in your life?
Very important.
Talk about that.
It really became kind of a focal point for me, especially in this business, because of the fact that, like, you see so many souls lost. You know what I mean? Like, even the people that have the biggest platforms, they're lost. They don't know what their platform is about. They don't know how to use it in the right way. And so the result is a cluster or a generation of lost people, because of the fact that they don't know what they're doing. They don't see God as a source. You know? So I won't say it's a godless culture, but it sounds like it sometimes. And so for me, God is very important, because I understand that he's real and how he's affected my life, how he's changed my life, how he saved my life in so many different accounts. And so for me in this business, he's the main source, my strength, my energy. You know, when I feel like, because sometimes you could feel like it's about you.
Yes.
I'm tired. I don't feel like it. I don't feel like it. But it's not about me, because when he gave me the platform and the responsibility, he entrusted me with other people's lives. He entrusted me with the responsibility to spread that purpose and to say that you matter. Because there's a whole bunch of kids out there that don't understand that they matter. You know, suicide is at an all-time high.
Yes.
Depression is at an all-time high. And I continue to say that because I continue to hear it every day. You know what I mean? I continue to hear from friends. I continue to hear from, you know what I mean? Like, just in a distance or in a newspaper. And so it's important for me to get that message out there, to say you matter, and that greatness matters, and that God blesses with all with a greatness within us. We just have to tap into it.
Right.
But if all of these big platforms tell that the youth is nothing, or they're worthless, or that they don't matter, then what's the result?
Yeah, and they do matter. So in light of that, right? You know, when you started to think about, okay, you know, I've got all this training,
yeah,
and I now want to make my own music, right?
Yeah.
You know, tell me, what was the foundation for that?
Just my fascination, my curiosity with it, you know.
Okay.
Stevie Wonder, Duke Ellington, like different composers and creators, Moses Hogan. I know these are like random and obscure names to some people, but that intrigued me as far as like them developing their own world, their own sound. It was their message. It was their perspective. And I found that I had a perspective, and my perspective was different. And I started to expound on that at an early age. So like, I started investing early. 16, I got $1,000 by doing a bunch of shows at community centers through my school. And so everybody, of course, bought clothes and shoes and all that stuff. But my homie, he had a 16-track Yamaha recorder, and that's what my eyes were set on. I was like, when I get this money, I'm getting a 16-track Yamaha recorder. I need that in my life. You know what I mean?
Right.
I bought it off of him, probably for insanely too much, but I just wanted it so bad, and that was the only person that I knew with this dope recording setup. I bought his whole recording setup off of him, and I never looked back. I just started creating and writing and producing songs. I didn't know what I was doing. It wasn't a thing of like, yeah, you know, I wrote and produced this. It was just, you know, getting stuff off of my chest, and it was therapy for me.
Yeah, I mean, I often talk about how, you know, Marvin Gaye, you know, What's Going On, that album saved my life,
yeah.
Right? You know, and the album was really all about telling a story and also talking about, you know, what was happening in the world at the time.
Yeah.
And so I related to that, right? But that also motivated me, right? Yeah. So tell me, is there an album in your life like that? Or is there any particular artist that you listen to that sort of, okay, this is it. This is some social consciousness here that maybe I might want to deal with?
Well, actually, the album that we have coming out, The Awakening, it comes out on March 24th.
All right, let's talk about that. Yeah.
It deals with a lot of those issues. So
okay.
The first record is called Be Great, and it deals with kind of a self-reflective thing. It deals with my generation as far as in what I expect of myself. One of the lines, it says that, you know, I'm scared to jump, I'm scared to fail, I'm scared of you, and I'm scared of myself. But what is life if I can't be great? You know, it's the raising the question, and I'm sending the charge out from the first record. Right. You know what I mean? And every record on after, you know, no matter how it feels, it has double meaning. So the next record is called Don't You Forget About Me. And it's that message of no one wants to be forgotten in this world. No one wants to be forgotten for what they've done or feel like, you know what I mean, they're not worthy of a memory.
Right.
You know, then the record's on up. It's like, you know, Look Up, which is a record dealing with how I view the world socially, politically. Then I have Pick You Up, which is another self-reflective record. I say in the record, it says, you know, you're just doing what you got to do just to keep the lights on, you know, and it just feels like your dreams just couldn't be any further than from where you are. And I remember being in that kind of gray and dismal place. So writing those kind of records on this album was very important for me. And of course, there's more records on there. But, you know, you have love, you have sensuality, but you have spirituality as well on the record. You have, you know, social consciousness, and it all came and stemmed from artists like Marvin Gaye with What's Going On. But then after What's Going On, you had, you know, Let's Get It On.
Yeah.
And then you had I Want You album.
Right.
You know, so, but then you have Stevie Wonder, you know, and with Stevie Wonder, you have Inner Visions and Music of My Mind and Songs in the Key of Life. And then you have Patrice Rushen and Joni Mitchell and Prince and Michael Jackson and so many different artists. And it was just so many different worlds for me to kind of dive into.
Right.
So when you're creating an album, you want to do everything that you possibly can, but you really want to center it and make it about your personal perspective to say, okay, this is all of the stuff that I love. And whatever happens when I create, whoever bleeds out of me for this song, it's whoever bleeds out of me for
right.
this song.
That's
you
cool.
know what I'm saying?
So let's back up a little bit again,
yeah.
right? And so you get out of school, and you know, you're also a writer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can talk about, like, let's talk about some of the people that you work with,
yeah.
and how you finally started to get into the business.
So, I had graduated from Berkeley back in 2009 and moved straight to Atlanta to start writing because that was my MO as a writer. I was just like, listen, I'm trying to write. I'm trying to get these records, yada, yada, yada. And I was found by Akon and his brother. And, you know, they helped to facilitate, you know, what was going on at the time. And so my first year in Atlanta, all I did was work studio, grocery store, gas station. That was it. That was my whole life. And I felt depleted after that because I needed to live, you know, being 21 years old in the city and I'm not living. All I'm doing is working.
Right.
It takes something out of you as a creative because I had nothing to stem off of. I had no source. You know, speak of love. Where's the time for love?
Right.
All I know is trying to get this money, you know?
Right.
So I had to recalibrate, essentially. But thank God, within the first year, Jamie Foxx was my first placement. And that was a great experience for me. But it also, I learned a lot of lessons throughout, you know, those years as far as handling business, making sure that my business is right as a writer, making sure I had a lawyer to protect me from certain things as well.
Right.
But I went on to, you know, write records for, of course, Akon. I wrote records for Trey Songz, Lil Wayne, Ty Dolla $ign, who else? Trey Songz and Nicki Minaj. And yeah, so oh yeah, and a couple of OGs who, how could I forget, Johnny Gill and SWV and Dave Hollister and Babyface and Diane Warren, and yeah, so it's been really cool.
So you're writing and you're listening and you're watching,
yeah,
your art being sung by somebody else, right?
Yeah, or just collaborating on it, you
yeah,
know?
Like, right. So then when it was time, right? Did you know, or did it just was it something that just you know, you just morphed into it?
Nah, God tapped me on my shoulder, honestly.
All right.
You know, I kind of had the artist thing kind of like buried under wraps. I always kind of had a, you know, my own thing that I wanted to do. And there was a certain time where, like, I just didn't like the sound of music and where it was going. And so I started creating my own thing. And I was like, how do I want music to sound? And those records were the actual records that got me signed to Motown
right
at the time. And then yeah, we just went through a whole developmental process, and you know, I kind of fought for what I believed in.
So what's your label right now?
Motown.
Okay, so you
Motown,
still
Motown. Motown Capital.
Okay,
yep.
All right, that's great. So you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how now that Because, I mean, you know, most people look at the business as, okay, I make a record, yeah, and so now, you know, I'm going to put it for it to get sold.
Yeah.
Talk about how you work a record so that you could go ahead and move up the charts and do that. I mean, obviously, you're here, yeah, part of that promo tour, right? But yeah, talk about that work.
First, you got to get to the record.
Yeah.
That's the most important part for me. You know, this has been almost 3 years in the making as far as, I say 3 years because that was the time where I was on tour with Maxwell. That was my first tour ever.
Right.
Back in 2014. And we didn't have a record at radio, but we was going to radio stations and, you know, we were diligent and, you know, the radio reps introducing me to each and every person and say, yo, this is Kevin Ross. We ain't got no record, but we just want to introduce you. And I think that was the best thing during the time. You know, I didn't know what the hell we were doing or what was going on, but it gave radio a great introduction to me for the rawness, the raw talent that I had. That's all I had at the time, was just raw talent.
Right.
You know, just me and a band. We were just rocking every night, opening up for Maxwell. You know, this is going from, you know, performing maybe once every 3 months to performing 5 or 6 times a week.
Right.
You know, so that was tough on us, but that was the best time of my life, honestly.
Right.
Then I did a Glade commercial, where we did a song called This Is My Wish, and I got a whole bunch of visibility from that. And it was a lot of expectation, it was a lot of excitement, it was a lot of, you know, the hoopla. And I didn't have my business together. And so just when there was a peak, I had to go into the valley.
Wow.
And I thank God for the valley, because in the valley was the lessons that I needed to learn about business and understanding that I'm a corporation. And so the next year, which was 2016, we came back with a record called Be Great, which was on Grey's Anatomy. And so instead of it just being released on iTunes, me and my team, we took it to XM Radio, and we really sent the charge out for it. And so as a result, Keith Thurman, which was the middleweight champion of the world, went on and walked out to Be Great on live, you know, television, on right, national television, which right, was an amazing thing. And it encouraged my team, it encouraged the label to start thinking about, okay, well, this kid needs a little bit more visibility. And so we went with this Long Song Away, which is doing extremely well on the charts right now. And I'm really excited. But like I said, it was 3 years in the making. So, you know, I've made a lot of records since then. And I'm just really excited for people to, of course, hear Long Song Away even more,
right,
but to get to the newer stuff. But it's a part of the journey. It's a part of my story. And I just want for all of the creatives and all of the artists to know that, like, even when you feel like you're ready, you may be ready, but there's always a new level to this. There's always something that we can learn or glean from, you know, whether that's a person, whether it's an experience. And so for me, you know, I never take these kind of situations or this opportunity lightly. So I'm always thinking, I'm always on my toes. It has actually developed a certain level of aggression inside of me that I never thought that I had.
Right.
You know, I've been so cool. But I think that when you're fighting for something like this in the music business, you have to be aggressive, and they have to understand that you don't take no stuff.
Life period, man.
Yeah.
You got to do that.
Yeah.
You know, Juan Castillo with you. Of course, you've been checking out my man, Kevin Ross, man, national recording artist. Of course, we're playing his cut right now. So before we, you know, when I end the show, I like to play something different.
Yeah.
So I want you to pick a song outside of what we're playing right now. And we're going to play that so that way they can hear what this album is all about, right? What this project is all about, right? Which one is that going to be?
It's going to be called Pick You Up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after the show, family, Pick You Up, my man Kevin Ross, you know what I mean? Hey, he's on his way. So last question, man.
Yes.
What's the best advice you ever gotten from who?
The best advice that I've ever gotten is from Maxwell. And Maxwell told me that I should never do a song that I wouldn't do 20 years from now.
Wow.
And when I looked at him, when he said it, I looked at the 20 years that he had in, and I looked at the time that I wanted for myself in this business, the longevity, and no matter how many years that it takes in order to get the visibility, it will happen. It will manifest. That is for certain.
That's great.
But I'm in it for the long run. I'm in it because of the fact that I'm in it because it is a business. But most importantly, I have a message, you know, and God is not going to never let me forget that message. So, you know, I for that, the platform will expand. The platform will grow.
Listen, I want to thank you for coming down, man. As a matter of fact, you know, one of the things that I got a problem with is the fact that a lot of young cats are not making R&B music anymore, right?
Yeah.
Real R&B music, yeah. Not pop R&B and all the rest of this, right? And this radio station is committed to that, right?
Yeah.
You know, not only with, you know, independent artists, but also new artists like yourself that are, that, you know, well, you're not new, but and local, you know, I, you know, keeping the local scene alive and exposing my local artists to everyone, you know.
That's very
important. So I want to thank you for that, man, because I think that you know, I don't want to go negative, but I think that a lot of our R&B artists that traditionally were R&B artists mm-hmm. are now trying to go pop in this. You know, look, mm-hmm. we know going pop is more money or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one question I always ask. You know, it's like, okay, I know that pop means you can live in a $10 million home.
Yeah.
But if you go with just straight up R&B, you might live in a $2 million home. Mm-hmm. That should be all right, right?
I mean, I think the truth is,
yes,
is that when we deal with pop music doesn't have a particular sound. It's just what it is. It's popular music, right?
Exactly.
So we remember in the early 90s, R&B was popular music. You know, Boyz II Men, you know, is still one of the best, you know what I mean, black selling groups of all time. You know what I mean? Motown, just the whole, they really had a sound. It was damn near like a genre.
You know heritage, what I mean? Man.
But it was pop music. So with that being said, what I encourage for every artist to really think about, for every creative to think about, is that your sound is your sound. The goal is to make it pop. So, I mean, that's the truth. So for me, I want for my sound to eventually be pop.
Right.
That doesn't mean that I'm changing over. It's just the fact that I want for the world to understand.
Right.
Our love and our soul of R&B and it's never died and it'll never fade. But we have to stay consistent. You know, it's not jumping on to, and there's nothing wrong with EDM. I love EDM music. I love dance music. I love all that kind
of
stuff.
Of course.
But it's about staying true to your sound and understanding that the world will eventually gravitate towards that. You know, so for me, I say to every artist, stay consistent, stay true to your sound. If you love R&B soul, be R&B soul. You know, if you have hints of other things, be true to that. But R&B hasn't gone anywhere. It's just taking a new shape and form. And, you know, I celebrate it because of the fact that it's leading us back to a true place. Everything that's happening in the world is leading us back to a true and transparent place where artists and musicians won't have any other choice but to be honest and transparent through their music.
Right, right. And I mean, people forget that, you know, R&B is rhythm and blues. And
yeah.
And obviously you found that out in terms of, like, you know, through your education, that, you know, all R&B was that when the blues decided to add the drums and bass, it became R&B, right? So you guys are still singing the blues because, you know, you sing about the problems, you sing about the trials and tribulations.
Yeah.
You know, that's the blues, right? You know, so it's all good, brother. But listen, man, I want to thank you, man. And
I
want you to introduce this song, man, to my audience. There you go.
What's going on? This is Kevin Ross, and now I am presenting Pick You Up off of my album, The Awakening, which comes out March 24th.
There you go. Juan Castillo with you at Electric Drum. We will see you next week.
I was watching the iHeart Awards yesterday, and I called right here.